Hey, everybody. It is our January 12th, 2021 A to Z call or a platinum call. Kind of remarkable it's been this many years. Someday I have to figure out when our first one was, but I think we're going on 8 years now of calls. So wonderful to see everybody. Okay, looks like Mary has started us off. You have a question about the new formula for Breeders' Edge Calcium. I just have to tell you, Mary, I just inventoried for Parks' litter, and all I have is the old stuff. And I have to tell you, I know. Do you want me to sell it? Should I auction it off?
They changed the formula. We start in with Siggy, and next thing she just goes, bleh, and out comes. And it's rancid and it just smells horrible. And not that placentas smell wonderful by themselves.
Yeah, no.
And I thought, well, that's really odd. Maybe we'll just hold back some placentas. Maybe she's just a little fool, first time bitch, nothing to compare to. Blah, again. And so we stopped that. She whelped fine without calcium. She's actually not required much of any, even while nursing. Great. So then next week, here's Fanny. Now, Fanny, this is her third rodeo. So I pretty much figure what to expect. And same thing, she just bleh. And man, I switched over to calcium citrate in some chicken broth for her to get through her whelp. But they've added a bunch of MCT oil and the formulation is different and it's being manufactured in a different facility. So I don't know what the deal is. I read some stuff on, and I left a review. Wasn't a happy review.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you're giving them feedback. I think that's really important because I've heard a lot of people say their bitches just can't get right up.
It just bounces off the stomach and it smells horrible, like soured. Anyone who's ever had a baby puke up sour milk. I mean,
thank you, Mary. I just finished dinner.
Oh, so, well, yeah, we're not to that, but you know, I just figure breeders are immune. I mean,
that's true. You know,
we handle all kinds of icky stuff, but I wanted to know if there was just any other feedback, if anyone had been hearing the same things, but not, you know, and of course I bought 12 tubes of it because I've got other litters planned. And so now I have this stack of stuff that's worthless at $13 a tube.
Yeah, you are not alone. I don't know if anybody else wants to chime in, but that is what I've heard repeatedly that, you know, what was the great thing about it was that bitches liked it. You know, they would eat it. And that it worked, the old formula. And now apparently they don't like it and many of them are vomiting it up. So I love Revival. I think they're doing a great job. So I think giving them feedback is really important at this point to see if we can get them to change the formula back. No promises on that. Well,
and then they have a new manufacturer. So I don't know if it's something in the process, but I do wonder, you know, they've added MCT oil for stamina, but man, I just wonder if that's just like the bullet that's making these dogs puke it back up.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting thing to add as opposed to just kind of straight sucrose or straight fructose, because it's not like they need to process MCT oil in the middle of a whelp.
And that's not as readily, you know, fat burns for a long time. It's not as readily available as for energy as, you know, immediate glucose, you know.
Right. But just giving them straight sugar of some sort.
And so fortunately I had some calcium citrate on hand that I could just combine in with some chicken broth. And I did that for Fanny because Fanny needs the calcium in whelp. Siggy?
Not at all. That's great.
She didn't need it. And she is, she only gets a Doc Roy's because she's jealous that Fanny gets it.
Because it's cookies.
And so, you know, first time mom, 11 puppies, acts like she's done this her entire life. And it's just absolutely, absolutely wonderful. So, but anyway, okay, well, I'll, if they won't give me a refund on it, I'll just chuck it, because I can't imagine if you're having your first litter ever and that's your experience with it, you'd be worried your bitch was sick.
Right. So the only thing you may want to do is offer it on the list, because some people's bitches may be doing fine. And oh, no. No, Celeste is saying not hers.
No, not only that, I think it's ineffective. I tried it on two bitches, and one, she didn't throw up, but it didn't work. It just didn't work. It was like giving her water. And the other one vomited it up. That was Star. And Mary, Tracy and I are making up our own by taking.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So Celeste, tell us what you guys are doing.
Okay. What we're doing is we're taking calcium citrate and we're mixing it with the chicken broth and dissolving it. And then we are adding what's that stuff? Oh, gelatin, a little bit of gelatin powder, and it makes it into a gel, and we're preloading it into syringes.
Well, you know, if you make a chicken broth using chicken feet, it will be gelatinous.
Well, I never thought of that. You mean I'd actually go to the store and buy those feet that I saw?
I was just processing that, Celeste. Like,
you know, okay. When I first saw that, I thought someone was into witchcraft.
You haven't eaten chicken or phoenix talons? My granddaughter says, it's a good thing you call them phoenix talons, Grandma, because no one wants to eat chicken feet.
I remember getting dim sum and everybody's like taking the chicken foot and
anyway. Oh,
my God. Well, anyway, if you put chicken feet with some other bones and stuff in your pot and do it for 4 hours, put it on the broth setting, and then actually all of the meat and the bony material and everything comes out is just mush. It's just like powder. And that was something that I had, you know, added in with Fanny's with her calcium citrate, but the calcium citrate is just so fast acting and it doesn't require food, but the gelatinous matter of the chicken feet broth is just really thick, and it's wonderful tasting. They love it. And it's good. What you don't use, little salt and pepper, and warm it up. And
another thing which I've discovered.
Celeste, hang on 1 second. Okay. So guys, we're going to put this out on the Facebook list or group, but I wasn't going to do it. I mean, Celeste has tried it and Tracy has tried it. I think making your own paste, although really it's kind of a jello type, a jello, whatever it's called, substance. For whelping, maybe, because sometimes it's really hard to get them to take pills. You know, the Doc Roy's are great, but if they don't want to take a tablet, and the Doc Roy's powder is good, but it doesn't process as quickly as calcium citrate. So as we fine tune this gel, we'll put it on the Facebook group and you can give it a try, sort of as a replacement for the oral cal, which just doesn't seem to be working right now. If it's working for you, go on the Facebook group and ping Mary, because she's got 12 tubes that she would probably at this point give away for shipping. I don't mean that, Mary.
Mine is of course the tubes that were thrown up.
Right. Oh yeah. Lovely. Right. Don't send those. Okay. Sorry, Celeste. Go ahead.
I was just going to say another great way. I mean, besides taking the time to, because it's all about me and time equals money. So, and I don't have much time. So making up those syringes was kind of great. And then it was like, oh man, this takes, does take time to make up. And Mary, that sounds great, but I don't know if I can do what you did with 4 hours and everything. But vanilla yogurt, Greek yogurt, I mean, my God, my dog thinks that's a gift from God and licks it up. And I have to put so much in for Star, you know, two heaping tablespoons of the calcium. I know. She's off it now though. Yay.
That's great. Yeah. So that's an option, guys, if you're having trouble, you know, the tube calcium is great during whelping because you can put it into the cheek of their mouth. But if it's making them sick, and honestly, if you have a largest breed dog, they're really expensive. You know, you're going through a couple tubes during a whelping. So this idea, you know, as long as you're making formula and liver water, you may as well make a little bit of calcium gel to help your bitch. And so stay tuned on that, but it sounds like it's a terrific option. And you can just buy, you know, syringes without needles. So we're not sticking a needle in, but a syringe without a needle. And then you have your own tube to just squirt it into the side of her mouth. So terrific.
And one thing we'll ask of you is the dosage. You know, I'm so dosage challenged, and I was like trying to figure out what does one tablespoon equal in a syringe and with you know, making it a gel and all that stuff. And then I just said, ah, screw it. I'm just going to give it to her and whatever it is, that, you know. So anyway, dosage.
During whelping, not that big a deal because you can put a lot into them without it being a problem. But we do want to know. So yeah, I will work on that, Celeste. Sort of, if you're doing a 3 cc syringe, put this much calcium citrate in to get a good dose for a bitch. Sounds good. I will do that. Okay, Aaron Bach, deworming parasite treatment. Can't find it. So Aaron, I'm putting a link in. So we are at the moment, if you've gone into Puppy College at all, we have changed over how we're doing resources and the search capability. I think I'm only a little biased, but I think the search capability in Puppy College is really good. Our search capability in Breeder College is something we have struggled with for 8 years. So Aaron, I just put up a link. Go to the breeder resource. So let me share my screen, guys, and show you. So when you, let's say you go into your student dashboard, hang on, there you go. And you go into, say you're in Platinum Plus. I'll wait till it comes up. So if you go up into resources, this should be where you go a lot. And when you go into resources, you all should see breeder resources and Puppy College resources. There isn't overlap in that. So if you're looking for kind of basic puppy and dog maintenance stuff, go to Puppy College. But if you're looking for breeders, click on breeder resources. And you come to the page with all the reports on it. So let's say you're looking for deworming. So you're up here and you're like, I don't know what Gail's stuck in under. So do Control F, and let's just say we're calling it worming. And so you always just gonna do Control F for now. We'll get it moved over to the Puppy College way, but it, for now, just do a Control F search on it and you'll come up with deworming, click on it, and now you get the report. So we are adding to the breeder resources literally every day. Nicole and I were just working on puppy diarrhea and bitch diarrhea. We have, we've tried to put and cut out pieces of the course that we think you're looking for sort of quick information on. And we're trying to get it all into breeder resources. And if you haven't gone to puppy resources, I'll just brag on that for a little bit. because I worked on this all weekend. And here you can do a much better search. Let's say we're just looking at vaccinations. And let's hope it comes up. There you go. So now you have the vaccination titers, et cetera. So right now, easier search on puppy resources, and you can find information on ear infections and vaccinations and socialization. And then in breeder resources, you do still have to do that old control F search there. I hope that's helpful, Erin. I know we know and have been trying to work on a better search capability in A to Z. You know, when two years ago, when I was doing a lot of seminars, we had printed out A to Z, and I know some of you guys have, and it was 600 pages at that point. It's now 800 pages. So finding something for a small business like us to be able to search that is tough, but we have a solution. We just have to convert everything over. So stay tuned, be patient, and just ask on the Facebook group if you really can't find it. And thank you for sending good wishes to my girl. I have no idea what's wrong, neither did the vets. Anyway, Sean says, we just found out we have coccidia on the kennel. We're gonna treat with Toll. Should we use 2.5 or 5? 5%. Sean, I saw you on here. Do you have litter on the ground or are you trying to prevent it? Can you unmute? I see you, but do you want me to unmute or try to?
How's that?
Hey. There you are.
Hey.
Hey.
Yeah, we have actually three litters on the ground right now. And two of them, we're pretty sure have it. The one is getting spayed and neutered today. And when they went there, they went to the bathroom and a vet saw worms. So while he's testing for the worms, he tested for coccidia and it came out positive. We tested for coccidia because they had the squirts about 2 weeks ago and it was negative, but I heard it takes 2 weeks for it to actually show up. And now it has. And so since we have three litters, I'm afraid that everyone's got it. And so now I'm going to have to treat for it. And so I was wondering, do I use the 2.5 or the 5%? Or do you have a better idea on how to treat for it before this gets out of hand?
Yeah, that's all you need is three litters with coccidia squirts to just make you evacuate the house.
And I've got seven adult dogs living here too. And so I'm sure everyone's got it now.
Yeah, so the adults are less of a problem. And actually, if some of the pups don't come down with it, that's not abnormal because coccidia tends to show up when we have immature immune systems or in adult dogs, sick dogs. But you got to be really sick to, as an adult dog, to show coccidia. So you may luck out, but it might be the smaller puppies. And sometimes it's just individual differences. We don't really know. It's not like they're weak puppies or bad puppies. They just get it. So your adult dogs may have it and be passing it, but they may never show signs of it. So I have some on hand for your adult dogs, but you don't have to worry too much. I think Toll-Tuberzol is the best option for it, but there's also Ponzerol, which I actually don't even know how to pronounce, but I wasn't able to find it recently. Does anybody have a source for Pons?
I do.
Oh, do you? Will you put it in the...
But you know what you got to do? You got to have your vet. It's got to be, what's that called? Compounded.
So like Wedgewood or something.
Yeah. So I use that now. I've switched over from Toltrazil to that. Ponzerol, I think is how you say it.
Ponzerol.
But I may be wrong on that because I don't pronounce anything right. But it's my vet turned me on to it and said it had to be compounded. So we did that. It's about the same cost, but actually cheaper because you only give two doses. And it's 0.1 cc per pound. So
will you put that in the chat?
Sure. And it works. And guess what? Unlike the Totrazil, the diarrhea goes away after one dose.
You had said that before. So yeah, Sean, we'll put that information on. The other thing I was going to suggest is CoxiGuard, which I just put in the chat. So Susan Patterson has used this for years. She's an Avadog member and runs the Canyon Fertility List. And Susan has had coccidia for a while. So she started pre-treating with CoxiGuard. And the link is there.
Can you say that again?
CoxiGuard, C-O-C-C-I, Guard. It's a revive. It's, you can get it from Revival. The link is in the chat, so you could just grab it there. And that may be an idea to head it off, because you know you have it, and you've got a lot of litters, and it's just devastating to get it. If you, it's horrifying, even if you have two puppies. But if you have a lot of puppies, you know, cleanup and everything just becomes horrendous. So you may want to take a look at that. I haven't used it yet, but thankfully I haven't had coccidia in several years, but Susan swears by it right now. So that may be another option. So you use the Toltrazuril or the Ponzerol for when they actually are showing symptoms, or you are treating before they have symptoms, like 10 days or 11 days. But you use the CoxiGuard, I believe, with the bitch. But look at the Revival. I'm speaking off the top of my head. Has anybody used it? I'm looking. Kelsey, have you used it? No. No. So if you've used it, put something in the chat. So the other one Celeste is putting in, it is a related drug to Toltrazuril. And it needs to be compounded. So compounded means you have to go to what's known as a compounding pharmacy, and they make it for you. They literally make the medication rather than you buying it off the shelf. But I've also heard really good things about it, and it does come in less expensive, because the Tolt's expensive, and especially if you're treating a lot of puppies and a lot of dogs. So
did you say the 5% or the 2.5% we should use?
5%.
5%. Okay.
Yep.
And Tracy found out that Toltrazil now is being made in a different country, at least the one she ordered, and it was less effective.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's another one of those things.
Yeah. Change is not always good. So there are some options. The one thing I would say, Sean, is now that you know you have it, treat early. Like, just treat at 10 days, 11 days, 12 days, even earlier than what we say in the deworming, because you want to try and get ahead of coccidia. Getting, you know, once coccidia has taken hold, it's nightmarish to try and get rid of it. But if you can get it ahead of, you know, attack it before the puppy shows symptoms, you will usually be in much better shape.
They're not squirting right now, but it's coming. So I want to take care of it.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Totally agree.
So should I pre-treat it with, or should I just go ahead and get the Toltrazol, whatever it is?
Toltrazuril. Yeah.
Just go ahead and get that and just start treating with it as soon as I, okay.
I would.
And while I have you on here, if sometime tonight you could talk a little bit about my puppies, you know, the real small, they're like 3 weeks. We've got 3 weeks, 7 weeks, and 4 weeks, and old. And I wanted to, hoping you could talk a little about some poop training for them.
Potty training? Sure. Yeah, let's go back to that. So catch me before we head off.
Thank you.
Terrific. Okay. Adrian, forgive me if this has been covered recently, but how do people bringing puppies in for the vet checks under the new COVID protocols? Multiple crates in a wagon. Normally I can just swing it because I'm handling them. I assume sing is swing, but they'll be taken from the car and brought inside, and we're curbside here in New York and Connecticut. Wing it. Got it. I think most of us are using crates on dollies or what are they called? The push. What do you put kids in? Strollers. The strollers, the dog strollers. Those are really expensive. So if you don't need one, you don't have to purchase them, but a crates and dollies will work. So the way we did it last time was crate, dolly, potty box on top. And in the potty box were the toys and the water and all the things that we want our puppies to have at the vet. So it's a good experience. And just sort of talk the tech through so that they were able to make sure that the puppies didn't go in there and start pottying all over the room, which often vets just expect, you know, like that's just going to happen. But if we can avoid that, we would really like to avoid that. So does anybody else have any experiences aside from vets coming to your house? Kelsey.
So our vet won't take any items in. They came in out with puppies. They won't take a blanket. They won't take, you know, a potty box or anything. They don't want any of those items with contact. So they just sent techs out and they carried three puppies in their arms and hauled them all in.
And did they haul them all in at once or did they haul them in, bring them out, haul them in, bring them out?
No, they took them three at a time.
So yeah, there were techs and we do that a lot with eyes. And I think that's a perfectly fine way to do it because the puppies aren't going in, hanging out on the floor, milling around, all of that. They probably are not even getting set down. So that works fine. I have to tell you, not taking a potty box in is like we have smallpox rather than COVID. I mean, there is no one getting COVID from a potty box, but I get it. I understand and respect, but a little bit over the top right now with things like that. But those are some options. Any other thoughts for Adrian? Okay. Sarah, foundation bitch is sweet, confident, energetic, and self-restrained. Her first stud is a service dog and has a great temperament. But how do I improve temperament when anybody can say their dog has a good temperament? Yeah, that's a good question, Sarah. Are you, can you unmute? Are you, I'm looking for you. Oh, there you are. Can you unmute or you want me to unmute? There you go. Hey.
Yes, I'm unmuted.
Terrific. So I think that's a really good question. And I will tell you that very early in my career, I got fooled by that. Somebody had said, oh, he's got a great temperament and he definitely mm-hmm. had a bad temperament and was throwing bad temperaments. And so I lost, you know, an entire litter to, because I had 3 out of 12 that in my opinion had unacceptable temperaments and I washed out the whole litter. They are golden retrievers and so, you know, you just don't have much tolerance for temperament. So what I learned from there, Sarah, was that I was going to meet every stud dog that I bred to. And I try not to meet them at shows. I don't know what kind of, I mean, obviously you're breeding to a service dog, but I don't know what else your puppies may do. But I don't want to meet them at a show because dogs at shows have been conditioned to have to show very good at temperament, to exhibit. Right. And right. So I want to meet them. I've met them at their home. I've met them at county fairs, which was a great way to assess temperaments on a dog. They're literally, this dog is being walked around by a 4-year-old and there is a goat that is in love with this dog and following him around and there were tractor pulls. So I'm looking for, I would do it at a rest area. I would do it at a Walmart parking lot because I want to see how does the dog handle these things. I also And if you happen to have a stud I'm going to use someday, I'll just let you in on my secret. I usually do my best to take one of my dogs because I'm really confident in my dogs and how they're going to respond to a strange dog. But I want to get a feel. And that doesn't mean they have to interact. I just want to watch, you know, that they see each other. Are they up on tiptoes? Is that tail over right. their back? Or do they have love ears on and they're thinking of flirting? So it's a pain in the neck, I have to tell you, to, you know, to try and visit these dogs and see these dogs. But it only took for me one litter of bad temperaments to say, the cost is so high to deal with that and have my owners deal with that. So that's, I think, a really good option. The second option, so two other things that I also do now. What breed do you have?
Standard poodles.
Standard poodles. So I know poodles have a database, but I don't know if you can see who bred to a stud dog. So in golden retrievers, we can go in. Now we can't see them all because not everybody puts them in, but we can see the breeders who bred to a stud dog. So I usually reach out to them and I say, hey, you know, I'm thinking of this. Tell me what you loved about the litter. Did you have any issues? I don't say, did you get good temperaments? You know, I'm really worried about this, or I'm not trying to lead the conversation, but I find that breeders are more honest or more unbiased, let's say. I don't want to say stud owners are dishonest. They just love their boy. And so if I can gather 15 people who've bred to the dog, then yeah, there are going to be issues and I'm not going to dump a dog because, you know, there was one issue, but I begin to see a trend. And then third, and then I'll let you talk. I ask trusted friends or anyone I know in the area that I trust to go meet the dog, or if they have heard of the dog, you know, have interacted with the dog, to tell me. So those are my, and I always think of it as kind of bracketing, you know, I'm trying to get it from as many different directions as possible.
Okay, so that makes sense. My question, so I have met this dog multiple times, and I have his daughter actually in my home. And I really like his temperament. I do feel like he has good temperament. My question is more based around like marketing and like selling those dogs. Because aside, I mean, I've done like CGC and things like that with my dogs, but aside from that, I don't know how to prove that my dogs have good temperament or that my puppies.
Hey, Pat. The Avidog puppy evaluation test.
Great way. I actually work as a dog trainer, trainer with service dogs. And my boss actually just bought the APET, and she's planning on doing all those temperament tests for me. I just want to, I'm worried about selling. This is my first litter and I'm worried about being able to sell all the puppies, and I want to find good homes for them, and I just want like people to know what they're getting, and I just don't know how to like, how do I phrase, because everybody's going to say that their dog has good temperament, so how do I prove that my dog has, that my foundation bitch and the stud have good temperament?
So I don't think that you can prove it unless everybody comes to meet them. So I think what we need to do, and I think this is true for all of us, rather than saying dogs have good temperament, that I just find that a vacuous term, like a totally useless term. Describe the temperament. So in your mind, what makes a good temperament? So I just bred to a dog, and the way I am describing him is that he died a long time ago, stable under all circumstances. He was an ambassador with other dogs. He never met a dog that he didn't like really like, that he was eager, that he loved to train, and he had no problem with repeating training over and over. He wasn't one of those dogs that's like, you know, it's 3 o'clock or I did that twice already. So I think, so the February webinar is going to be on the middle exercises of the APET, because I got so much feedback on starting the APET that now I'm going to do the middle. But we need to look at those traits and say, how do I describe a dog using those traits? What's the energy level? Is it moderate energy? Is it high energy? Is it low energy? Because some people are looking for high energy and some mm-hmm. people are looking for moderate energy. And honestly, lots of people are looking for low energy in their mm-hmm. dogs. So stable, how do they respond to stressful circumstances? Do they, and so if I had a dog that responded to stressful circumstances, stable in the face of stressful circumstances, but whines under stress. Like, I think that's a really important tidbit to tell people that makes it more authentic. You know, okay. you know yeah. the dog. You are yeah. describing the dog, not mm-hmm. this generic term that it has a good temperament. Yeah. Because I remember years ago, and I don't know if anybody else has experienced this. So, you know, I raise Goldens, and there are people in the world that think Golden Retrievers should be like non-dogs. They should never defend a bone. They should never bark at a stranger. If they are attacked, they should just roll over and take the attack. Well, I don't agree with that. I mean, I think Golden Retrievers are dogs like everybody else. And if they're attacked, they're allowed to defend themselves. And if they have mm-hmm. a really juicy bone, they're allowed to look at somebody and, you know, do the little lip lift and say, back off. Yeah. So we got into this conversation, and there are breeders that think that that is completely inappropriate behavior. And then, you know, I thought that was perfectly appropriate behavior. I think mm-hmm. communicating that to people, that I think dogs should be dogs, and that they're mm-hmm. allowed to communicate with other dogs. I think that that's an important thing to sort of lay out on your website, as opposed to the usual just phrases that really don't mean much.
That makes a lot of sense. I know poodles kind of have, people have preconceived notions about poodles, just like they do golden retrievers, you know, that they're snobbish, or they're just going to lay around and listen to classical music, or, you know. And so that's a really good point. That makes a lot of sense. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. And you don't have to go into excruciating detail. You probably can, you know, because mm-hmm. you know the dogs, but
right.
of sort of the big lumps. And I always say, who am I trying to sell to? Mm-hmm. And how does this temperament match those people? How do those dogs truly match those people? So if I'm looking for homes that are looking for low-key dogs, then, you know, those are the big pieces. You know, it's not a demanding right. dog, it's not a high-energy dog, or it's a low-energy dog, and it's easily trainable, and things like that. So okay. kind of think of the dog, think of the buyer that you think will be appropriate. I'm not saying twist the words so that you can right. sell to people,
right.
but what's the buyer that's going to thrive with those puppies, and then okay. hit those big high points that really matter to people.
Okay. Can I ask one final quick question?
I was going to say, Sarah, when you have that written, share it on the Facebook group if you want.
Okay.
And if you feel like it, or you have a first draft or something like mm-hmm. that, and we can okay. take a look at it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. So just one last question. I noticed I was watching the puppy application videos, and the first one talked about finding the right buyers and like your marketing program. I was wondering, do you guys have anything about like marketing, specifically about marketing?
Not yet. Not yet. Celeste is going to do that for us. That's the class Celeste is writing for us. So the puppy app, if you go through the puppy application process, mm-hmm. you'll see there's a fair amount of marketing in there. And then if you go through Introduction to Transformational Dog Breeding and you go through the Finding Homes module, which is like six, maybe five, maybe six. Okay. Those should be helpful to you. Websites essential and a real website, not just pictures of puppies. Pictures of puppies don't get you your peeps. They just get you peeps. But they don't get you who is looking for your dogs and how do you communicate that? But we don't yet have an SEO class, search engine optimization class. So stay tuned. Okay. Coming.
Also, have you joined Good Dog?
Yeah, have you joined Good Dog, Sarah?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Oh boy, join it. You'll have so many puppy buyers, you won't even know what to do with them.
But you do have to write your profile. I'm putting it in the, so it's gooddog.com.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. Thank you.
But write your profile well, because they have hundreds of thousands of people coming onto the site looking for puppies and you only want a few of them. You know, you want, how many puppies do you have? You want eight homes. Uh-huh. You know, you don't want 108. Write carefully.
Okay. Thank you. I really appreciate all the help.
Good luck. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's exciting. Okay, where are we? Who am I missing? Do you want me? Marilyn. No. Brent, I'm going back. Wow. Calcium product that didn't work for Mary is the new Breeder's Edge Oral Cal Plus, right? Mary, yeah. The new Breeder's Edge from Revival. Such a good company. Arlena says, proud of my head with making calcium citrate and broth. The head was it separated and then keeping it. Yeah, you have to refrigerate it or even freeze it so that you can thaw it as the whelping starts. I make everything like 10 days out and freeze. And frankly, Arlena, it doesn't matter if it separates, if you can just shake it up and put the whole 3 cc's in. Or if you have a smaller dog, 1 cc syringes, because you're just going to put the whole thing in. And it really doesn't matter if the citrate's separate from the broth at that point. Brenda, how long can homemade broth last in the fridge? I only keep it 3 days in the fridge. I keep it much longer. I don't know what everybody else does, but that's 4 for Mary. So 3-4 days and then freeze it so that Marilyn, my bitch has gotten lethargic. Oh, it sounds like my bitch today. 22 days post-diastrous, low-grade fever one morning, blood works normal, urine's normal. Took her to the vet on Clavamox. No Pio, is that Pio not pro? Pio?
Yeah, no Pyometra.
No Pyometra, no UTI, no other flags. Okay to Kleeper, and she's not bred, right, Marilyn?
No, she did an ultrasound, and they did, and she's kind of early, but they were able to see a few embryonic sacs.
Nodule things?
So, I mean, her actual ultrasound is next week, but they just popped her on there to just check for pio, which they confirmed there wasn't any. So we're not sure if it's my I can't say
Metritis?
The word. Thank you.
Yeah.
What or something else. I mean, by evening, she was normal back to temp, you know, temp back to normal. So I don't know if she was just spiking something simple, but she has been off her food uncharacteristic for her. And she's not even really eating the boiled chicken all that well.
But you are at 22 days.
Yes.
Just saying. So, you know.
I know.
So I think you did all the right things there. I don't think there's any problem leaving her on Clavamox to sort of generically go after. So that isn't going to help Papio, and it isn't going to help a Metritis.
Right.
Because Metritis is just an inflammation, and Pyometra Clavamox doesn't really make a dent in. So if it's something else, that she just picked up something else, then the Clavamox will probably help. And if it isn't, if it's, you know, a perking pyo or a Metritis, you're just going to know when it gets worse. You know, there isn't, right. If we go in and look for a pyo and there's no evidence, there's not much else we can do.
Right.
You know, you don't want to start her on prostaglandins. It's going to affect the puppy. So I would monitor her pretty carefully. I think you're doing a good job with that. The eating, you know, that could just be I'm pregnant, you know, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah.
But Jack figured, you know, the timing was right. It was it just kind of. And then I said, you know, let's just toss you on the table and take a temp. And then it was 103.6. And I went,
oh, yeah.
Ew. Going to work with me today.
No kidding.
And it's like, yeah, you got to come with me. Sorry.
And everybody else is fine.
Everyone else is fine.
Well, hopefully if she has something minor and the Clavamox is going to get it and that's mm-hmm. it. It's it you know, aside from we don't like putting puppies on antibiotics so right. early in their lives, but we hate bitches with infections even more.
Yeah, and that was the whole discussion. I mean, I worked for a fabulous practice, and you know, it's not just one doctor, it's like three or four of them that, you know, huddle together and decide what's going on with my dogs. And, you know, so the consensus was, yeah, probably Clavamox, and, you know, but your choice, you know, they
probably better than Amoxie.
You know, what I'm comfortable with, because they know what I am.
Which what would that
they're
be?
Fine with. They're fine with who I am. But yeah, so I went with it just on hoping that I would sidestep something that might ramp up to something more.
Yeah, I mean, if she was at 102.9, I'd probably say you were overreacting. Although, you know, in pregnancy, 102.9 is high. But 103.6, I'd be doing something.
Yeah, and that was on three different thermometers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let us know. Hopefully it's just a passing thing to add gray hairs to your head.
Yes, and I have plenty of those things.
There's no evidence.
You're generous.
Okay, I'm going to move on to Angeline. Angeline, I don't know if I can see you on here. There you are. Can you unmute? Can I unmute you? I asked you. There you go.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Trying to get the video going. I'm not sure if it's going to work.
No worries.
So I had Platinum Plus a couple months ago, and there was nothing I could do until my female went into heat, and there was nothing I could actually get going yet. So she went into heat now, and I had stupidly taken to her vet to try to rule out a vaginal stricture, and the vet was not sure at all, but it definitely felt abnormal. So she suggested I go to a repro specialist. I took her to Lomira, Wisconsin, which is supposed to be a really good clinic there for repro, and they told me there was nothing wrong with her. She was tight because she was fit and a first timer. And that was on Friday, which was day 7, I think, and she was at 0.5 for progesterone. I was able to coordinate between two different vet clinics to get progesterone done today, and it was supposed to be 4.3. But because of the timing of getting the results communicated back and forth, and they wouldn't give me advice from the second place because they were treating Lamira as the basically the main doctor, so
right.
They give me advice there. I finally got them to coordinate it like 5 minutes after closing time, and I did get to talk to someone very briefly on the phone. They're suggesting that, they highly suggest that I get progesterone run again tomorrow.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
And then it sounded like ideally Thursday would be our best breeding day.
Oh my gosh, I think you're way early.
Way early.
Yeah, so I think, not way early, but early. So 0.5 Friday to 4.3 today, that's a pretty zoomy, if there's a word. You know, she's moving quickly, but unlikely to go from a 0.5 on Friday to today being ovulation. It could be ovulation because ovulation can occur at 4, but that would be kind of a crazy LH peak, 2 days to ovulation, to have ovulation today from 0.5. So my guess is ovulation is tomorrow. If ovulation is tomorrow, Wednesday, the eggs aren't ripe until Friday. And if she's tight, you don't want to try and breed her before those eggs are ripe, or she is going to be one unhappy dog because it's going to hurt. She's not ready at that point. So I would personally be thinking Friday, Saturday, Sunday, if tomorrow's progesterone is 5, 6, 7, something like that. Now, ideally, if you can, you confirm that ovulation on Thursday. So if you've looked in the timing course, you know that we no longer have a level, a number that tells us when ovulation occurs. What we have is a change in the progression. And so ovulation typically occurs between 4 and 8, but how do we know ovulation occurred? We check it the next day and it's gone up at least 3 points. So my guess is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, if you get a progesterone tomorrow, that is sort of confirmatory. That makes sense. And did you say you're not on the journey group?
I had taken some time off and I haven't managed to get added back yet.
Because we haven't added you back, or have you tried to join?
I did today.
Okay.
It's been a crazy, crazy week.
No, I get it. No worries. I just want to make sure that if you have those numbers, try and get in and post it. And if you already click join, Macy will get to it, or Steve or I will get to it. So, but put the numbers on there and we can sort of look at that whole picture and say, yay or nay, it looks like ovulation occurred. I think with a girl that's really tight who has refused other boys, I would not breed her early. I would want to breed her after the eggs are ripe. So that's going to be 48 hours after ovulation.
So the stud owner had, she doesn't seem incredibly keen about like a side-by-side AI. I have AI kits. I'm willing to try to do it. I'm still struggling a little bit with cytology, getting the swab in far enough.
So that's because she's still early and she's tight.
Okay.
So I think when we struggle with cytology, I had the same problem with my bitch this time. They are really tight and it's painful to them.
Well, I'm just so inexperienced. I don't know if it's me or her.
You can do it.
I managed to get it 2/3 of the way in, like it,
that's great, said
one time, and then like it went back to nope, not happening.
So, twirl, lots of twirling. Yeah. So just keep twirling.
So part of the complication that comes in is that the stud owner wants her at their place. She's not super excited about doing an AI ourselves if it actually came to that. And the only place I can find, thank you, COVID, that actually will do AI and is actually accepting anyone that's not already in their system is about an hour away from their house. But on top of that, they're only available Monday through Thursday.
Oh, so, well, that isn't going to help.
And is it likely to, am I likely to think that Monday is just way too late at that point, or?
If you can get an appointment first thing Monday, I mean, a lot's going to be driven by tomorrow's progesterone.
Well, and the other question is, can I get in? Because I just barely got an appointment today and they couldn't find the information coming over. They thought it was faxed and here it was emailed. So I called and they were already closed. So I'm going to have to try to call first thing in the morning.
So what I would do, if it was my bitch and I were you, I'd make an appointment, their first appointment on Monday morning, and I'd cancel it if we got the breathing and everything's done and you don't need to do an AI. But if you don't have an appointment, chances are you're not going to get in. If you have an appointment, you can cancel it and they can bring somebody else in. Obviously, cancel it as soon as you know you got a breeding or something like that. But, and Monday's a holiday on top of it. So I would definitely get that appointment tomorrow and just say, I want to do an AI Monday morning. What's your first appointment? Try and do it as early in the day as possible. Now, I'm saying that without seeing tomorrow's progesterone. I'm just doing a guess from what you've told us. But I would want to get a placeholder on an AI mm-hmm. that you can, you know, cancel if you need to. You asked when, how long would I let them try? Are you talking at one time or how many days?
Well, we have like preliminary plans for me to just bring her over to the stud tomorrow. And she doesn't seem to mind if Freya, my girl is there for a long time. She has no problem with that. I just don't know if it makes any sense to do it that way, if it hurts anything, if it helps anything, if it gives her time to settle in or whatever. If I can't get another progesterone appointment for tomorrow, what I do, I don't know. It's just, I don't know.
Breeding's hard. So the problem with taking bitches early to, I mean, some stud dog owners are great and really understand the heat cycle. Some basically just breed bitches when they show up. And so you know this is a bitch that's already refused stud dogs. You know this is a bitch that's really tight and is uncomfortable. You don't want her bred before it's time because it's going to hurt. And now you turn a bitch off to breeding and okay. You have a bitch that is going into breeding thinking this is going to be painful. I don't want to do this. The vast majority of bitches, when they are in the fertilizable period, so they are 2 days past ovulation, the vast majority of bitches don't need to settle in. They just need a guy. That's what they need. That's what they're thinking of. You know, as long as it's not a chaotic place, she should at that point be interested in breeding. Now, you know, she obviously has proven in the past that she was not, but maybe you were early in the process and right. Early is painful, very painful. And so we don't want, it's why bitches eat stud dogs, because it really hurts. And if they tie when it's early, it's really painful to them. And it's not painful in estrus the majority of the time. And so that's why us timing is so important. And I know a lot of people say, oh, just put them together. But it's just not fair to a bitch to just put them together when it's too early, because the vast majority of stud dogs will try and breed her, particularly when she first arrives. Not all of them, but many of them will. They're like, she's here, I'm going to do it, and then I'll figure out if it's the right time.
Okay.
They're boys.
Yeah.
Is that helpful at all?
I think so. My husband is saying, oh, you don't need to do another progesterone, just get her over there and call it good. And, you know, I'm doing all of the researching and overthinking and everything. So
I'm big on overthinking too. What I would say, Angeline, is if you can't get a progesterone tomorrow, get one Thursday, because that will give you a huge amount of information too. Tomorrow would be great, but Thursday will be a close second.
So it sounds like you don't suggest getting her over there until Thursday at the earliest.
I would not. I'm seeing okay. Molly shake her head. Yeah, I would not.
Okay.
No, especially since she's already rejected males.
Okay. We had the opposite thought process where, you know, settling in and getting used to him, and they have a female over there, which I assume they'd not have her in the mix if they're trying to breed, but
yeah, I'm a great believer in bringing bitches when they're ready to breed and letting them breed and not letting males try and try and try. I had a bitch, this was really early before I had figured a lot of this stuff out. The male literally rubbed her vulva raw. She was bleeding because he had tried it. She wasn't breedable yet. We didn't know it. It was like day 11, and that's when they're supposed to breed. And it was just bloody, which was horrible for her. So I would not take her early. I would shoot for when she's ready.
Okay.
That's my thinking. Anybody else can chime in.
Angeline, where are you located? Because I live like right next to Lamira's clinic.
I'm near halfway between. I'm about a half hour east of Wausau.
Okay.
And
Greer should fit you in. We've never had any issues with last minute calling to get a progesterone test there.
Well, the problem there is that Lamira is 2 hours from our house. I have 5 kids that have to come with me everywhere. And the stud dog is 2 hours in the opposite direction in Eau Claire. So we were able to get a test today in Stevens Point, which is only about 40 minutes away. And hopefully we can do that again.
Is Stevens Point up north? I'm trying to think of who.
Middle of the state.
Middle of the state. I think I've used every vet clinic. I can't remember the names of them, though. They're not local to me.
Yeah, I mean, Sundell's in Madison. But
Sundell, yeah.
From you?
I'd probably more like 2.5 hours south of us.
2.5. So I guess, you know, at some point, Angeline, we're like, okay, what are we willing to put in to get her pregnant?
Right.
And to not ruin her for future breedings. And the good thing for you is you get to drop her off, you know, so it's not like you're going to be hauling her back and forth every day. Mm-hmm. So I would say, given all that, 5 kids, lots of driving, I personally would do the Thursday progesterone and either take her Thursday or take her Friday based on that.
Okay.
Because that's going to be your confirmatory day. If it's 10 or 11 or 13, you're in great shape. Take her. No, and
Thursday will be too late by any stretch.
Not at a 0.5 Friday and a 4.3 today.
Okay.
Even if she ovulated today, the eggs aren't going to be ripe till Thursday. So okay. You're fine.
Okay.
I know it always feels like such a rush, and being patient in breedings is so incredibly hard. It really is. But there is sort of this rhythm to it, and rushing into it isn't usually helpful to the bitch. It's also not helpful to the stud dog because he may not still have great semen.
Okay. Helpful? So I will make an AI appointment tomorrow for Monday, if at all possible, and try to get a progesterone test for Thursday morning, or if I can only get Wednesday afternoon, that would still be.
Yeah, that would be good. Yep.
All right. Well, there's a plan.
Good luck. You sound so stressed. Hang in there. Breathe.
All right.
I know. Feels harder than it should be, but good luck. Let us know.
Will do. Thank you.
Lori's asking what potty box have I been happiest with. So we use to Lori, we use the portable Puppy Go Here boxes, which are in the course. You can get them on Amazon. They're great little temporary boxes, but the plans in the course for making your potty box, I've used those for 8 years. That's pretty much what I use, is we just make them from the plans in the course. Costs like $20, pretty cheap. And the wonderful thing about it is you can make it in the size that fits your pen. Now, I have to tell you, I am the most unhandy human being on the face of the earth. I can hammer a nail and screw a screw, but not much else. And I can make that potty box. And so you can do it. They aren't that difficult. Okay, I see lots of Laura. Are you on, Laura? Temperament question I asked, would you repeat? Oh, that's what you ask breeders. Would you repeat the breeding? That's a interesting question to ask. Wouldn't work well with me because I don't repeat breedings, but that would be a really good question to ask. And obviously if they say no, it would be a follow-on conversation. Great question. Janessa, I haven't had good success with ship semen. So do you ever do live cover as a backup? If so, what would be the best timing if you're hoping for the ship semen to work? That would be a dual sire breeding. So you would be breeding to two stud dogs. So those are complicated breedings. I don't have a great answer for you right now because we don't really understand what makes some boys dominant in a breeding and others not. We still don't have a very good picture on that. But if it was my girl, I think honestly, Janessa, you can unmute if you want. I would time the heck out of that ship semen and go for the ship semen, because we don't know if fresh semen sort of knocks out the chilled semen, because the chilled semen isn't as strong as fresh semen. And so we don't have a good feel for that yet. The optimal days we know are LH plus 5, LH plus 6, LH plus 7. And so that would be a great time to put the ship semen in. But if you've already bred to the natural or the fresh semen, that may interfere with her ability to get pregnant from the chilled. Probably the other option, I'll let anybody chime in who's done dual sire. All the dual sires we've done have been two frozens, multiple frozens. But I might do the fresh chilled on say day 5, day 6 post LH, and then do the natural. Mary.
When we did a backup with a fresh, we opted to wait as long as we could. And now we were doing a frozen, so it has a very short life. But we waited until we got into diestrus and her cervix was closed and we went in with a TCI. But the bitch had been bred before with a TCI and the vet was confident he could do a TCI. Now, funny thing though, when he's telling me that he was going to wait to do it, I'm having just heart
I bet you were.
and he says, pardon me, but it's not like the eggs go poof and they're not ready. And so he said he's done TCIs as late as 8, 9, and 10 and still got litters, but you just can't do a live breeding or a standard AI once the cervix closed. But we gave the desired sperm all the time in the world that we thought we could get, and then we came in later. And our frozen didn't thaw well. We only got 12 mil and they were pretty beat up. So we waited 26 hours and he knew that at that point we wouldn't get anything more from the frozen if we got anything at all. We backed up and it was the fresh live that we did with the TCI, LH plus seven, cervix was closed, and there were 11 puppies. And everybody, and we tested everybody.
All from fresh?
All, and it was all from the fresh. But we gave the frozen 26 hours. And that for frozen is enough. But I don't know how long you would want to give it for the fresh extended, because it's going to last better than the frozen. But we did. But if you do the fresh first, I don't think a frozen or a chilled is going to be able to compete with that fresh going in first, especially if it's a live cover rather than a TCI. So we opted to go late. And if the bitch will tolerate a TCI later, you know, when the cervix is closed, then you could give your optimal boy the best shot you can, and then pick up whatever's missed with your TCI later on.
Yeah,
I love that. That's great advice. I think I like that idea. I think I'll try that.
And do you know you're getting two fresh chilleds or one?
Two. The times we haven't been successful, it has been with one. So I mean, I'm learning from our mistake. So definitely we'll do.
We
two,
all do that.
Just, yeah. So, but I don't want to miss that again. So I just was wondering if there was any good tips on that. So I like that advice.
Yeah, I think I agree with Mary. If anybody else has experience, chime in. But the majority of dual sire breedings don't end up to be dual sire breedings. All the puppies are from one. We got three and one. We got 100% younger dog on one dual sire, and we got three puppies from one sire and one from the other from ghastly semen. So it's possible, but it is not a science yet. It's an art. But if you do that timing, she should get pregnant. You know, so if the goal is I'd like to give the fresh chilled a chance, then you're going to time the heck out of that. You might do LH plus five and LH plus six, and then bring in the boy on LH plus seven. Good luck. Great. Any feedback on vomiting during heat cycle prior to breeding? You can unmute Sylvia. It's not good. Is that good feedback? Is that helpful feedback?
Yeah, I know. she's always really bad on morning sickness, but I've never had her do this during her heat cycle.
I'm losing you. Anybody else here, Sylvia?
It looked like pretty digested. Concerned, and I mean, you know, just kind of, she was fine otherwise. We went ahead and did live cover breeding. And then a few days after that, I woke up with her heaving in the bed, of course. And she threw up a vial with a little bit of blood in it. Then I took her to the vet. I'm like, okay, let's see. This is changing. So let's see. They couldn't find anything though. They x-rayed for foreign objects. They ran all the blood work. They saw no evidence of pyo. They didn't see any, they couldn't find anything. But I didn't know if maybe this time around after this last litter of puppies, her temperament changed. She's just more excitable, more, I don't know if that's something anybody else has seen either. The first two breedings, no change, still herself. This time around, she's just, she's much more wound up. I don't know any other way to put it, but, and so she was just frantic to get a boy the entire cycle, just crazy. So I didn't know if she was just keeping herself stressed out and that's what was causing it. They put her on Pepcid and I don't remember the name of the other thing, and that has stopped the vomiting. But of course it could be masking something, but I didn't know if anybody else had ever experienced anything like that before.
I have not. I don't know if there are other messages, but Sylvia, do you have an adaptyl collar on her, and are you giving her any L-theanine?
No, other She's back to her normal self now. Once we got her bred, she's chilled out. I mean, she's out, you know, we bred her and she went out and she's her normal self again. So it was just like, she was so frantic to be bred. I don't know, but
The last two breedings, she discovered it. So now she just, it's time. No, I don't know. I haven't heard of it, but if somebody else has, pop on in there, obviously vomiting during pregnancy is not unusual, but
she always does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she does. I remember that. So something to think about if you're going to breed her again or you see this again is to slice those meals up into smaller pieces. Because when you're getting vomiting bile, it's often sort of frantic hunger or something like that. And if we can keep something in their stomachs, they'll often not do that. So that's just a thought, you know, a little meal before bed or something.
And like that was the interesting thing. It was only the bile that one time. The other time it always had food in it.
She was actually vomiting.
Yes, but it wasn't right after eating. It was hours after eating, and it would just be a tiny little puddle of mostly of digested food, you know, look just like cream. And then she'd lap it right back up and she's fine.
Good. How do we live with these heathens?
Really. I know.
they're crazy making. Well, hopefully it doesn't indicate there really is any problem, and it was just sort of frenzy and excitement, and you know, that got herself overwrought, basically.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Now once she comes off the meds, it's going to be about time for her morning sickness to start. So I'm not going to know if it's over or not.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. She's definitely enjoyed her morning sickness. All right. Good luck. Let us know.
Thanks. Can I ask a quick timing question? Just so I'm trying to make sure I've got as close a due date as possible, because she's been spot on, you know, obviously. So I know my whelping window. She didn't follow her normal pattern this time either for ovulation. But I've heard a number of other breeders say recently that their girls have spiked and they've missed breedings because of it. It was, the timing was about the same as normal on at like day 11 or 12 or something like that. But we did progesterone at 5 p.m. on a Tuesday, and it was at 2.8. Then 11 a.m. on Thursday, so close to 36 hours, you know, it wasn't a full 2 days. So 11 a.m. on Thursday, it was 9.8.
So ovulation was the Wednesday. Mostly.
Yeah, I was guessing Wednesday evening, like that when Wednesday was probably
2.8 at 2 o'clock and
so 5 o'clock on Tuesday.
5 o'clock.
And then 11 o'clock on Thursday, 9.8. So if she usually just crawls up, she'll go 2, then she'll sit at 3 for a couple of days, then 4, and then she'll jump to 8. So this was a quick spike.
Normal. You're just not used to normal. So that would make me think LH was Monday, ovulation was Wednesday.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And when on Wednesday, I don't think we know. You know, those numbers are so variable that I just don't think we know.
Yeah. So we bred. We did live cut. You know, of course, the stud dog owners, get her down here. I'm like, we've got time. So we did live Friday night. Older boy. So we did Friday night, Sunday night, Monday night.
Great. And she bred Monday night?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Terrific. Because it looks like you got LH plus 4.
6 and 7.
Ovulation. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great. 5, 4, 6, 7. Terrific. Fingers crossed.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I have three more questions, then we'll wrap. Lori says, have you heard if vets are being allowed to do AIs during state of emergency when people are around? Yeah, Lori, it's completely state dependent and locale dependent, and honestly, veterinarian practice dependent on whether they are doing AIs. I know there are some clinics that are doing no AIs, and others that are doing them. I know the vast majority of repro specialists are doing AIs like, you know, any other time. You can't go in with them, but they're doing the AI. But it really is just so location specific right now on what's happening. So Lori continues, it's called a stay at home order. So I wonder if vet services, I think you have to call the vet to find that out. It's just a tough, you can't breed naturally, Lori, it has to be an AI. I'm looking to see. Okay, so give them a call, good luck. Okay, I had two questions mailed in. Question about LH kits starting, bitches just came in season. This is Holly, and she's wondering if she can or should order LH kits herself. I absolutely would do that, Holly. You can take them to your vet to use so that they can run the test if you want, but you can go to Revival, order LH kits, and then you know you have them. They're all set. Read the instructions, and it's always a good idea to have them when you're trying to time litter closely if you don't know your veterinarian has them on hand. And obviously, you can call and find out if they'll hold some for you, but that would be my recommendation. And then Juliet sent a question in about trying to pick a stud dog. And I think it's a long question, so I'm not going to go through the entire thing. But it is a question about what issues should we be concerned about with stud dogs and what issues should we not be concerned about. And so this dog, he had benign testicular tumors. He had a skin tumor that was benign. They did have good margins and they needed good margins. His dad had LP, laryngeal paralysis. I think this is a golden retriever, so laryngeal paralysis isn't quite the crisis it is in some other breeds. He had a son that is a crypt orchid. As soon as you see that, you know he carries the gene for crypt orchidism. That doesn't wash him out of the breeding program, but you know he carries the gene. It only takes one son to tell you that he carries the gene. Great structure, but he has these things in his background. And he's carrier for PRA and he's ichthyosis affected. Compared to, Juliet's breeding for agility dogs, compared to another male who has deformed pasterns, wrists. So if I was picking those boys, I would go for the ick affected PRA carrier. Her bitch is completely clear of all DNA diseases, so you know no one's going to be affected. And things like benign tumors, depending upon how old the dog was, we just have to say, you know, how high a standard can we hold these dogs to? Because
that's what I'm wondering. Yeah,
I have glasses. I have really bad knees, you know. And so if you think about it, we hold dogs to the standard that we don't hold human beings to. And that's not a bad thing. But I think especially when we look at a breed like Golden Retrievers, we just can't put benign tumors in the same category as non-benign tumors. Does that make sense, Juliet?
Yes.
And yeah. And does that kind of feel comfortable?
Yes, there were just so many things that kind of piled up, none of which were individually a problem. The laryngeal paralysis kind of bothers me because one of his brothers had it and his dad had it. So that
I bet I know the line. I bet I know which line you're breeding into. So LP is definitely something we want to keep on our radar. And if you're not familiar with laryngeal paralysis, the flaps in the larynx become paralyzed. And so they stop working and the dogs have breathing problems, particularly in the heat and humidity. If they're swimming, they can have trouble where they, you know, the larynx doesn't close so they can get water and aspiration pneumonia. If it isn't super common in golden retrievers, a lot has to do with the age of onset. So if you have a 13-year-old that develops LP, you have a 13-year-old golden retriever. Like seriously, that's brilliant. They're going to get something. If you have a 4-year-old that develops LP, that would be probably the one red flag for me in all of the things that you said. If my girl didn't have a problem and I'm comfortable with her lines and her parents don't have a problem, then it might not be, it kind of depends upon that age of onset. Do you know what age his dad and his uncle, is it his uncle? Had it.
Yeah, I do not know the age of onset for them. So I will ask.
Yeah, that's a really good question to ask. And for me, that would be really the only decision point. Benign tumors, cryptorchidism, keep it in the back of your mind. You may see it. And if you see it in your litter, you know your girl carries the gene. Ick affected and PRA affected, none of your puppies are going to have it. So I think that the LP for me would be kind of the thing that made me question it. But bad pasterns get passed on and they're terrible in agility, as you know. I mean, yeah. they're really a problem. I drove out to the Midwest and turned around and drove back because I got there and I had all these stacked pictures of the stud dog. Terrible pasterns.
What makes me nervous about not being able to meet the stud dogs right now. It's just, you know, I would have never known had I not met him. So, and he said he's breeding to two other agility people. And I was like, oh, but you know,
A lot of agility people don't know structure. They see the dog on course and they see speed and
He's not an agility dog. He wants to get his lines into the agility world. For hunting, it's fine. You know, he does some hunting here and there, you know, just the test stuff. It's not a lot of work on the dog, you know.
And exactly.
I've loved everything else about him. And I was like, I find this other stud dog and I'm just going, what do I do? You know, because there's just always something. How much do I keep looking? And, you know.
Yeah, obviously, I think we all have never ending searches until like it's time. We have to decide.
Oh, okay.
You just keep accumulating information. But I think one of the things I would caution is when we know a dog really well, we're going to know more problems than the dog that's halfway across the country and we know him through his, what we see in his record or something like that. Those dogs we don't know as intimately, so we usually don't know as many issues. So take, unless he was one of those dogs, and I don't know if you've ever seen one of those dogs that has a million lipomas, like they just have lipomas, which are benign tumors, but they have them everywhere. You're like, okay, maybe I don't want to add that.
Yeah.
To my line, but a benign growth here or there, I think we just can't hold that against them. That's my opinion. Obviously,
yeah.
People can have different.
It was just the accumulation of things, really, that made me go, wow, okay, this is a lot to take in. But she was very honest with me and open about all the different things that she has seen come up in the family.
That's great. That's a wonderful thing to work with.
I mean, she posted it on Facebook already. I was like, wow. But there's like 14 or 15 people that are like, yes, we want that dog. And some of my other friends that have Goldens know that dog and they train with him. And they're all like, yes, go for that dog. So, because they all really, really like him. He's small. He's 10 years old and he's like a speed demon. He's the top on the bad dog list right now. I'm like, okay. You know, so I love everything about him.
Yeah, so when you have a chance, where did I talk about it? It's in the Crypt Orchid report, which is in the journey list under files. But there's a book by George Padgett called Control of Canine Genetic Diseases. And the book's, you know, it's a book, so there's a lot to read. But what Padgett does is he takes issues and he ranks them 1 to 9. And he says, take your issues and fit them into these categories. You know, the first one causes pain and death. The 9th one is like your benign tumor. And we can't rank them all the same. So he gives us a really nice way to say, where does this issue fall? And then he gives you some guidance on how to select from dogs with those on whether you should breed them or not. So I find it's an old book and it is still as logically sound. So you may buy the book and you're only gonna read the one chapter that lists the 1 through 9, but it's a great chapter to read. And you know, you can probably get it on Kindle, but I know I listed them in the Crypto Orchid report. And I think we were, if you Google Padgett, P-A-D-G-E-T-T on the journey list, we were talking about hypothyroidism and it came up then as well.
Okay. Padgett.
P-A-D. Okay. So just Google that on the journey list and you should see the list of his 1 through 9. And that will probably help you.
Okay.
Or by the book.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah. Good luck.
This is my first time at all of this. So it's all good. I'm excited.
It's a little nerve wracking, but it is. We always say it's a wild ride.
Yes. I can tell all the comments here. I'm just going, oh no. I have a lot more work to do to get up to speed, but she shouldn't come into season until March, sometime between March and May.
Oh, great. So. Don't say that in front of her.
Yeah, exactly. I know she's kind of acting off a little bit and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, she'll come in, you know, February 7th or something like that. So don't say a word.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Cool, good luck.
Thank you.
Kelsey did remind all of us that Danette Wyke, who is a vet in Avidog, who will sell you LH kits. Danette's wonderful. Anytime you see Danette posting, pay attention to it because she's a good vet. And she's on the journey list, so you can tag her there. Okay, well, so much for my let's wrap it up in an hour, but I'm going to go check on my girl and see if she's gotten any better. And nothing like a sick 9-year-old golden retriever to just make you not sleep, but hopefully she will be fine tomorrow. Reminder, we're talking about milk and making milk on the 20th of January at 3 p.m. And then just that little hint that we're going to be talking about, I think it is exercises 6 through 14 in the APET in February. So we'll be putting out the information on that and you can get signed up for it. So terrific, guys. Great to see everybody. Stay safe. Let us know how your breedings are going. Angeline, get on the journey list and let us know how those progesterone tests go, and everybody else, good luck with your puppies and your breedings. Thanks, guys. Bye.